Accession number 19638, reel 6.
Mr. Charles Jordan, reel 6. Did you find yourself thinking about your family while you're in the prison of war camp, and did it concern you that they would be worried?
Quite frankly, no. I hadn't been in communication with my family very much right through my service. I got very few letters. In fact, the only communication by mail was as a pen friend who I subsequently married when I returned home. And so I didn't think much about families. Not until I was due to come home, really. I didn't know what I was coming home to. I didn't know if anybody was alive or dead. I subsequently found out that they thought I was dead. I'd been posting missing and they hadn't been notified. So my homecoming was rather unusual, shall we put it.
Did you have facilities for washing at the camp?
Well, my own washing facilities was actually under a hose pipe at the place we worked, because Japanese climate is very, very hot, and after each day's session, before you put your clothes on to march back to camp, you were in such a filthy state that the only way was a hose, which was in the road between the warehouses, right out in the open. There was no modesty. Everybody stripped to the skin and hosed one another down. You couldn't do otherwise because you were either smothered with dust from beans or with the perspiration that was on you during your working hours. If it's sugar, you would treacle from head to foot. As regards cleanliness of your hair, most of us, including myself, had shaved our heads or cut them absolutely short as they could. And the peculiarity about this is that once it was done, our hair never grew until we started to have regular protein food, in other words, European food. It was one of those very, very funny things, actually.
Related to the
diet we were on, and the circumstances. And I didn't even grow a beard. I had no shaving facilities. But as far as I recall, I don't think there was any prisoner of war there in that camp that had a set of whiskers in the near 3.5 years. I'd never thought about it in that way before. It's a funny thing.
Was there ever any talk of escape?
No, quite honestly, no. There was no escape. People might say that wherever you are, there is a means of escape, but there was no means of escape. You stood out like a sore thumb. And where could you escape to? You're on an island. Japanese is a very big island. The only place you could escape to was over a very great expanse of sea, and there was just never entered our minds. It was hopeless to even to think about it, really.
During the time that you were there, can you recall the... could you think of the attitude of the Japanese towards each other?
Excuse me. Yes. As regards the military, anyhow, the authority goes from the top to the bottom. Each one, each rank, high rank, is subdued, can subdue a lower rank and can do, punish them indiscriminately. I notice this right through the ranks. For instance, a case in point is that you see a third class private, which is the lower order, a recruit, I assume. He's walking along the road, obviously in uniform, and he meets a second class private coming the other way. If he doesn't bow to the second class private beats him, smacks him around the head. Now, I saw this happen, and that goes right through the ranks. There doesn't seem to be any sort of, I'm putting you on a charge. Discipline, punishment is administered on the spot.
Was it always the head that was beaten?
It's always, well, yes, round the face, the slaps mostly. But whether that third class private was big and burly and the second class private was small and insignificant, the third class private was not able to retaliate. I never saw it happen right through. What contact I was able to see amongst the troops themselves. But I did see this actually in the town where they weren't on parade or anything like that. And I saw this happen. And later on I inquired, and that is the case.
Would you say that most of the Japanese guards were young?
It was a mixture, predominantly, I suppose, middle-aged around the camps, obviously because the younger and the more active required on the numerous war fronts, but at being home, or home to them, Japan, obviously, I assume similar to our home guard or in England, they were the non-combatants, as you might say, that were in charge in our, over us.
Before you entered the prisoner of war camp in Osaka, were you aware of the brutality meted out by the Japanese?
Yes, to a certain extent. I never saw actual incidents before I got to the camp. But I saw the casual way they treated humanitarian methods, the way we were treated actually in our original camp, as regards no medical supplies, when obviously they had plenty. The meagre rations that were issued to us, all and sundry, in that original camp. So, they weren't very likeable, weren't a very likeable people. be quite honest, and that's putting it mildly. The military, of course, I'm referring to.
We have read and seen perhaps in movies how some men, some POWs, fraternise with the Japanese. Did you see any?
Not in my theatre of war, no, never. There was not one case of it. Even on the working parties, we worked alongside some Japanese working men. We used to try to show them up in our working abilities, such as carrying heavy weights up and down planks and things like that. Because I think most of the working Japanese in Japan at that time, I wouldn't say they were a real energetic and strong people. And we had, after a period of time, we got so used to the work we were doing, we discovered the way, the safest way of carrying out those tasks we were given. Otherwise, well, we would have been injured, and we learned the hard way, I think is the right word for it.
During the time that you were there, were you aware of any other theatres of war? For instance, were you aware of what was going on in Burma?
No, not at all. I never found out anything about Burma until I got home. That theatre of war and the European theatre of war was just completely unknown to our men in Hong Kong. We had no news and no way of finding it or hearing anything about the outcome of any wartime activities. And which is one of the drawbacks of life, that you had no news or no way of finding out. We didn't learn Japanese. It's a very, very difficult language to master. We learnt the rudiments of answering questions, but and saying thank you or otherwise, but that's all. We weren't really interested. We didn't want anything to do with the Japanese, although they were our capturers.
In the Osaka prisoner of war camp, was it only men from Hong Kong who were in the camp?
Oh, yes, yes. Mm. There was a mixture of Royal Scots, Middlesex, all British. I don't know where the Canadians finally ended up, but in our camp it was all British servicemen, other ranks, no officers. And in a way I'm rather glad. I don't mind putting that in.
One thing that interests me is what a uniform does to a person. I know that you didn't have a uniform at this stage, but was there like a sense of belonging to a certain regiment and still feeling that inside?
Oh, yeah. Being a regular serviceman and the Royal Artillery, which is the senior regiment, I was very, very proud. I'm still very proud of my association with the Royal Artillery. I always will be, and that's one of those things, I think.
So would you say that extra strength was probably found from the fellowship of being it all in together, all in it together.
Yes, I'm sure this is so. Everybody was faced with the same conditions. Everybody knew that to survive they've got to associate one another and not quarrel or... But nothing was ever said on that light, it just happened. And... well, it's just pretty charming.
Did a sense of humour exist while you're in the Osaka prisoner of war camp?
When we were free, yes. When we finally knew it was all over, then individuals started to sort of liven up and, how can I put it, live again. I can't really recall any sort of, any really comical incidents, but... yeah, I think general enlightenment, lighting of feelings entirely. There were one funny, very, this is personal with my friend. He was a Royal Artillery man. His nickname, I can't even recall his first name, or only his nickname, and it was Dinky Rogers. When we weren't notified that that the war was over with the Japs, we just knew the guard disappeared, and we contacted the Americans by radio, and they eventually found us by with a big POW written on the warehouse that we were then installed in, because our own camp had been bombed out the month before. This incident was, we knew it was free. We'd got American rations dropped by plane, by parachute, and we were all beginning to feel our feet a little. And Dinky Rogers and myself decided to wander around the area we were in, and it was a bombed out area. It was very sort of marshy, canals going through, and we wandered over this, and we found a derelict, well not a derelict, a bomb building, which we promptly examined, and inside it apparently it was the equivalent of our brewery, but they brewed sake, which is a very potent rice wine, which is the main Japanese drink, and naturally enough we imbibed a little. And we decided to get back to camp, and Dinky Rogers was well under weather. I wasn't much better, but to get back to camp we had to traverse a canal, and the only way, there was no bridges, the only way we could get over was a sunken barge, a flat barge, which we walked on the gunwales to get to the other side. Well, all I remember, I got back to the camp and I flaked out on the, what we would call a bed space, and being woke up by somebody shaking me about half hour afterwards, asked me where Dinky was. And I said, well, he was following me, come back with me. Hasn't he got back yet? No, there's no sign of him. So he questioned me where we'd been, and I was forced to take him back on the route we'd travelled on. And lo and behold, we found Dinky Rogers, and he was clutching a bottle of sake, and he'd fallen as he was going across the canal. But luckily he landed with his tummy on the gunwale, and he was still laid there, still clutching this bottle, flat, absolutely flaked out. And they had to carry him back to camp. And I was subsequently stayed with Dinky right away until we got to Canada, and then I lost touch with him. Oh, he was a funny incident. No, I haven't drunk sake since.
From your own experience and others, what are your lasting sentiments having experienced some of the brutality of the Japanese?
Well, to be quite frank, having endured it and after all these years, I've sort of washed it from my mind, more or less. I know they, from hearsay and history and the organisation I belong to, I've heard the tales of the treatment by the Japanese on our men on the Burma Railway, and the sadism that occurred, and brutal treatment. But I really can't comment on it, really. I've sort of blanked it out of my mind now. I hope that the Japanese as a nation have learnt their lesson, and that the only contact I've had at all was meeting up with a party of Japanese young ladies in Perth, on a trip in Perth. And they offered to take my photo of my wife and myself outside a winery on St. Margaret's River. And I did converse with them and ask them where they came from. They actually came from Osaka. And I said, well, I know Osaka, which surprised them no end. And I said, I worked in Osaka. I didn't say what. They couldn't understand that. I said, it's a long time ago, before you were born. So they had no inkling of what had occurred or anything like that. I think they've sort of blanked it out of their records now. I'm rather annoyed that the British government didn't take steps to claim for the atrocities they administered to us. Unfortunately, at that time, I think the only reclamation was a matter of about £3 million, which is peanuts, really, especially with the amount of men that in action over there. But that's right through the ages. I mean, English history, once a serviceman has finished his service, he is forgotten. I mean, I'm sorry to say this, but it is so. In comparison with America, Canada and Australia, their servicemen were treated financially, anyhow, 100% better than the ordinary British servicemen. But that's history again. right from Nelson's day, once you serve, whether you've been wounded or what have you, you just became another person, not wanted. And I'm sorry, but this is a fact. And I think it's, to a certain extent, it still does apply even now in this country. Well, after being bombed out of our camp and put in this warehouse, we suddenly were aware of the guard disappearing. Previous to that, we had a pamphlet raid by the Americans telling us of the, or mentioning the bombing of Hiroshima. And on the pamphlet it told the Japanese that if they did not capitulate, cities named on the document would be bombed in the same way as Hiroshima had been bombed. On the list of cities, the first name was Kobe, Osaka and Kobe. The next target was Nagasaki, and I think the final target was Tokyo. We later heard or was told that the Americans flew over Osaka and Kobe, but weather conditions were bad, so they went on to secondary target, which is Nagasaki. And so we were very, very fortunate in that we survived that. When the Japs had actually left the camp, we realized it was all over. We'd contacted the Americans by radio, Japanese radio that we acquired. They asked us to identify the camp by writing POW on the roof in big white letters. After doing so, about 24 hours after that was done, an American fighter or light bomber, a Grumman, flew over and dropped a parachute flare, a message attached saying, "Have seen, supplies will be dropped within 24 hours. Within 12 hours, a flight of four bombers came over, the flying fortresses, as we call them, and drums of food, clothing, everything was dropped on that first drop within 12 hours of them identifying the target. And in the next 24 hours, they'd drop supplies that would last the whole camp for a 12-month. But amongst those supplies was everything that was required. Boots, underwear, uniforms, American rations, which were wonderful. We soon learned that you eat a little and often rather than gorge yourselves. Then from then on, we just had to wait for the Americans to arrive. We contacted them again, and by this time the RSM had resumed army control, British army control.
RSM?
The RSM, yes. Regiment Sergeant Major. And on a parade, he asked the volunteers to stay and assist the Americans on the repatriation of other camps in the Osaka and Kobe area. By that time, I was very aware of my general appearance, let's put it that way. And I thought,